Have you written one yet? Today is part two of our discussion of inventories on this episode of Recovery Support with Kevin Bergen. This is Recovery Support, and I'm Kevin Bergen, licensed psychotherapist. This show is to support those in recovery from sexually compulsive behavior and to offer that support with education, inspiration, and motivation. Now, last week, we talked about step one inventories. Today, we're going to talk about writing an inventory in the context of step four. First, we're going to read the problem on page 203 of the SA White Book. And again, think of this in context of writing your inventories, of being able to open things up. Page 203, the SA White Book, the problem. Many of us felt inadequate, unworthy, alone, and afraid. Our insides never matched what we saw on the outsides of others. Early on, we came to feel disconnected from parents, from peers, from ourselves. We tuned out with fantasy and masturbation. We plugged in by drinking in the pictures, the images, and pursuing the objects of our fantasies. We lusted and wanted to be lusted after. We became true addicts, sex with self, promiscuity, adultery, dependency relationships, and more fantasy. We got it through the eyes. We bought it, we sold it, we traded it, we gave it away. We were addicted to the intrigue, the tease, the forbidden. The only way we knew to be free of it was to do it. Please connect with me and make me whole, we cried with outstretched arms. Lusting after the big fix, we gave away our power to others. This produced guilt, self-hatred, remorse, emptiness, and pain, and we were driven ever inward, away from reality, away from love, lost inside ourselves. Our habit made true intimacy impossible. We could never know real union with another because we were addicted to the unreal. We went for the chemistry, the connection that had the magic, because it bypassed intimacy and true union. Fantasy corrupted the real. Lust killed love. First addicts, then love cripples, we took from others to fill up what was lacking in ourselves, conning ourselves time and again that the next one would save us. We were really losing our lives. So what's so big about step four? You may have heard people talk about step four with a deep sigh or a sense of real accomplishment. Step four isn't for the casual meeting attender or for somebody in recovery for someone else. Steps four and five involve writing down a history or an inventory of your acting out behaviors, and it provides you an amazing opportunity for self-discovery and growth. We're going to jump right in today with our reading from the SA White Book on page 105. This is the chapter speaking specifically about step four, which reads, "Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves." Facing the wild elephant. Something inside us always knew we'd have to face ourselves, but we kept running away, refusing to take that long, deep look in the mirror. And the longer we put it off, the more we resorted to our drug to cover the feelings and guilt, which produced an even uglier image we had to flee the more. We were like the man in the ancient parable who, fleeing a wild elephant, takes refuge in a well. He hangs on to two branches over the opening, while his feet rest on objects jutting out from the sides. Suspended from one branch is a hive of honey, which he starts eating. The pleasure this gives him, plus the darkness of the well, keep him from seeing that two rats, one black and the other white, are gnawing away at the branches from which he hangs. That what he's standing on are really four snakes, thrusting their heads out of their holes, and that below him is a dragon with gaping jaws waiting to devour him. The two rats, we're told, are night and day, which successively eat away at the span of our lives. The four snakes represent those basic elements in our system that keep us in equilibrium. The honey is the pleasure of the senses, whose deceptive sweetness seduces us to ruin. And the dragon is the inevitable end that awaits us all. The wild elephant, we might add, is the self we're running from, fear of which drives us on our mad flight into the dark hole where we prefer to stay and hide. When we come out of hiding, turn, and face this terrible beast in our fourth and fifth steps, he disappears. In his place stands that exposed and erring self we had left behind, the real we. Without facing the truth about ourselves, there is no hope for lasting sobriety, serenity, and freedom. Quote, I could never figure out why knowing the truth about God never set me free, or the truth about psychology or the 12-step program. But when I finally came to the place where I saw the truth about me and despaired, well, that was the beginning, unquote. What a relief to finally face the great fear, ourselves. We always knew that's what we had to do, but we hung on to our misery too long, and after a certain point, found we were powerless to let go. So when we determine to go ahead with step four, we pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. If the admission of powerlessness brought us to our change of attitude and reconciled us to God, that's steps 1, 2, and 3, the truth about ourselves became the raw material from which our new lives would be built. Only the self as it really is can be changed and live and grow. The one hiding in the well will surely die. From page 50 of the 12 and 12, by now the newcomer has probably arrived at the following conclusions, that his character defects, representing instincts gone astray, have been the primary cause of his drinking and his failure at life, that unless he is now willing to work hard at the elimination of the worst of these defects, both sobriety and peace of mind will still elude him, that all the faulty foundation of his life will have to be torn out and built anew on bedrock. The moral inventory. What is a fourth step inventory? Listen to what Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 and 12 call it. From AA, a personal house cleaning, a fact-finding and fact-facing process, an effort to discover the truth about ourselves, a search for flaws in our makeup which caused our failures. Since it was self that had defeated us, we consider its common manifestations resentment, anger, grudges, fear. We look for our own mistakes, where we were to blame, selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened. We admit our wrongs honestly and are willing to set these matters straight. We describe the hurt we have done others. We discover the choices and attitudes that drove us into acting out the role we have chosen to play. And this from the 12 and 12. This perverse soul sickness is not pleasant to look upon. Instincts on rampage balk at investigation. The minute we make a serious attempt to probe them, we are liable to suffer severe reactions. If temperamentally we are on the depressive side, we're apt to be swamped with guilt and self-loathing. If, however, our natural disposition is inclined to self-righteousness or grandiosity, our reaction will be just the opposite. We will be offended at suggested inventory. We believe that our one-time good characters will be revived the moment we quit. If we were pretty nice people all along, except for our drinking, what need is there for a moral inventory now that we're sober? We also clutch at another wonderful excuse for avoiding an inventory. Our present anxieties and troubles, we cry, are caused by the behavior of other people, people who really need a moral inventory. Therefore, we think our indignation is justified and reasonable, that our resentments are the right kind. We aren't the guilty ones, they are. People who are driven by pride of self unconsciously blind themselves to their liabilities. Listen to the frank admissions of one person who, it turns out, after many sincere tries, could not connect with either sobriety or the program. Quote, I dread the fourth. I have the feeling that not only will I have to tell it to someone, but that I'll then have to do something about it all. And I don't want to do anything like that. I just want to be fixed. Locked into such an attitude, we could never break free. And only we can change that attitude. For the above person, it could have been the beginning of recovery, there is no dread to the release and joy that our fourth step can bring. At this point, our experience parallels that of the alcoholics exactly. Pride says, "You need not pass this way," and fear says, "You dare not look." But the testimony of AAs who have really tried a moral inventory is that pride and fear of this sort turn out to be boogeymen, nothing else. Once we have a complete willingness to take inventory and exert ourselves to do the job thoroughly, a wonderful light falls upon this foggy scene. As we persist, a brand new kind of confidence is born, and the sense of relief at finally facing ourselves is indescribable. How we go about it. This business of the fourth step inventory need cause no confusion. It is, in fact, very simple. Writing our fourth is writing about ourselves, who we really are. And since our defects didn't come about in a vacuum, we can pretty well reveal the truth about ourselves by telling about our relations and encounters with other people. One way to go about it is to take up, one at a time, any person or incident we have had bad feelings about. Describing the feelings we had at the time and examining them, we then ask ourselves what we did wrong or how our attitude was wrong. The simple procedure and examples given in Chapter 5 of Alcoholics Anonymous have proven helpful to many here. No one has ever taken the perfect or complete fourth. Many have found great value in doing it again in later stages of growth and awareness. A well-written or well-organized inventory may be no true inventory at all. The fourth is the person, and in the emotional area, people are not computers. Human emotions don't travel in straight lines, they zigzag all over. It is not necessary to slavishly follow someone else's outline, format, or procedure. We write about ourselves as best we can. The key is looking at our own defects and wrongs, especially in our relations with others. Whether we proceed one defect at a time or one person or incident at a time usually becomes clear as we begin. And once we start, we open up the blocked channels and it all starts coming out. All our wrong attitudes and actions have to get out, so we write them out. We set them down in black and white so we can see ourselves face to face. When it's down in writing, we can't quickly turn away and forget what we saw, as in a mirror's fleeting image. If we find we are blocked on the past, there's no sense trying to force it. We pray for willingness. If we find we cannot do it without undue erotic arousal, something is wrong. A talk with one's sponsor is indicated. Better to look forward to being able to look at ourselves in a different spirit. In such a case, the aborted attempt has already told us that something about our attitude needs more surrender. Even though it seems impossible and unnatural for us, we make a searching and fearless inventory of ourselves. We do it because we don't want to. And this becomes part of the great adventure of doing the difficult. Knowing there will be another human being we'll share it with, one who has gone through his or her own fourth and fifth steps, we face looking at our darkest secrets and misdeeds and get them all down on paper. Taking responsibility for our own recovery begins in earnest with the fourth step inventory. The payoff. There's another reason why the inventory is a must. How can we ever experience forgiveness and freedom from our wrongs unless we bring them out? Getting our secrets out into the open is one of the first concrete demonstrations that we want to change and starts an ongoing process that will continue to bear good fruit. The fourth and fifth steps can be the beginning of a lifelong ability to increasingly face ourselves and take responsibility for our own recovery. Recovery and healing await us when we open this door to the miracle of spiritual union with ourselves and others, and without even realizing it, union with the source of our lives. Until we can write out our fourth step, we apparently cannot see or face ourselves. Until we give it away to another, we aren't willing to let go of our wrongs and be free. And today we'll close again with the solution on page 204 of the Essay White Book. We saw that our problem was threefold: physical, emotional, and spiritual. Healing had to come about in all three. The crucial change in attitude began when we admitted we were powerless, that our habit had us whipped. We came to meetings and withdrew from our habit. For some, this meant no sex with themselves or others, including not getting into relationships. For others, it also meant drying out and not having sex with the spouse for a time to recover from lust. We discovered that we could stop, that not feeding the hunger didn't kill us, that sex was indeed optional. There was hope for freedom, and we began to feel alive. Encouraged to continue, we turned more and more away from our isolating obsession with sex and self, and turned to God and others. All this was scary. We couldn't see the path ahead, except that others had gone that way before. Each new step of surrender felt it would be off the edge into oblivion, but we took it. And instead of killing us, surrender was killing the obsession. We had stepped into the light, into a whole new way of life. The fellowship gave us monitoring and support to keep us from being overwhelmed, a safe haven where we could finally face ourselves. Instead of covering our feelings with compulsive sex, we began exposing the roots of our spiritual emptiness and hunger, and the healing began. As we faced our defects, we became willing to change. Surrendering them broke the power they had over us. We began to be more comfortable with ourselves and others for the first time without our drug. Forgiving all who had injured us, and without injuring others, we tried to right our own wrongs. At each amends, more of the dreadful load of guilt dropped from our shoulders until we could lift our heads, look the world in the eye, and stand free. We began practicing a positive sobriety, taking the actions of love to improve our relations with others. We were learning how to give, and the measure we gave was the measure we got back. We were finding what none of the substitutes had ever supplied. We were making the real connection. We were home. Join with me in the third step prayer. If you need to look it up, it's on page 63 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, page 95 of the S.A. White Book, or you can Google third step prayer. Here we go. God, I offer myself to Thee, to build with me and do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always. Please email me with your questions, with feedback, and with commentary at kbrecoverysupport@gmail.com. This Recovery Support podcast does not promote any program or fellowship and only informs about resources that I have found helpful to my clients. You can refer to the show notes at recoverysupport.podbean.com, and I hope you have a terrific week and have a sober day.